So, TJ, I just got back from the UP, and I had a marvelous time.
So did we. And it was so nice to see you, and we had a great event in Rapid River. And it was a small group, but it still was awesome. And to see you and Roslyn work together like that, really cool. Really, you guys are like on the same page and everything.
Yeah, in a lot of ways we are. We also have our own unique flavor with some things, but it seems when we work together, there's a congruency, which is really lovely. We also, we did a workshop called Aphrodite's Answers, and it looks like we're taking that on the road. I met somebody who lives in Tucson, so that's on the docket.
Really?
She's coming here. Yeah, but I'm coming back to the UP, too. So if you guys are stuck with me, once a year I come in with the wind. Yes. And speaking of the wind and sailing, one of the actual first thing I did when I hit the UP, I went sailing. And I went with a group of people. Rosalyn had won this trip. And I went last year, too, and this year I actually had the pleasure to hear stories of the sea from the captain of Superior Odyssey. His name is Nico Economides, and he's here with us today to share some of his experiences and his tales. I told you a little. Welcome, Nico.
Hi, Joy. Hi, TJ.
Hi. How you doing, Nico?
Hey. I'm doing just fine.
Awesome.
But I want to thank you for coming and joining us on the show. The sailing trip that we had was just a perfect way to start off our adventures, or my adventures in Marquette. I have to tell you, I got such a kick out of the stories that you were sharing. But would you share a little about how you got involved in sailing and how long ago that was?
Well, I've been sailing since I was a little kid. My great-grandparents had a place on Lake Huron, and I live near Lake Michigan. And my mother's side of the family is up from the UP here, around Lake Superior. So I've just grown up sailing on you know, all three of the Great Lakes that border Michigan, and I just love it. It's definitely a pathway for me. It's a passion, and you know.
Yeah, now, you've lived in the UP most of your life?
I've lived here, I guess, yeah, now you could say most of my life. I moved up here when I was 18.
Okay. And when you got there, right, what was it? What was your first experience that happened that actually drew you to the lakes?
Okay, well, okay, now we'll, if I can start maybe getting into some of the stories, if you want to hear the story.
Yeah.
So maybe a little bit more than just quick, short answers. Because
okay, well, this is good. Please.
Okay, well, growing up, you know, I grew up in the suburbs in a very settled area of the lower Michigan, and the water paths were really drew me in. Because they weren't like straight lines of roads and houses and buildings. So I just loved the water and the places where water flowed through. You know, usually there's trees and the twisted roots hanging down the banks and all the animals. So that was definitely a draw. And when I turned 18, I basically felt that I'm an adult now, so I can make my own decisions. So I got into an old wooden canoe that my father helped me restore, and my mom and dad stood on the shore and basically with tears in my mom's eyes, and my dad telling me to be careful, got in the canoe and paddled up here to Lake Superior. And
wow.
That was from the Grand River, which is in the southern end of, you know, with the river mouth is the southern end of Lake Michigan, paddling up Lake Michigan in through the northern end of Lake Huron, and then up into the St. Mary's River. And the lower lakes at that time, you know, they're beautiful, and I love them. I'm definitely, there's a special place. But there was a lot of recreational boaters down there. So I was used to, you know, having these big, bright, shiny plastic boats, you know, zooming by. And you could smell the Tropicana suntan lotion, you know. But then as I started to make my way further north, that slowly shifted. And by the time I entered the St. Mary's River and worked my way up into Lake Superior, I was greeted with something completely different. And I knew I had arrived somewhere that was primeval. What greeted me was the shoreline devoid of any traffic boats, you know. That took a while, but eventually I did see a few freighters steaming through, you know, great big oar boats. Very few recreational boaters. And paddling north, I went to the North Shore, where, you know, I was in awe by the rock and the, you know, the craggy little mountains of the North Shore. And that pretty much marked, you know, my first real experience with the lake. I had seen it as I was younger with trips and, you know, coming up here, but that was the time it really touched me the deepest.
So that trip, that very first trip, how long did it take you to sail that far or to canoe that far?
Yeah, and it was partially sailing. I had a little sail rig for the canoe. And when
oh, you did, yeah.
Yeah, I'd sail along, you know, for portions of it. That trip, you know, I intended, I guess in some ways it's never ended, really, you know. But
that's a great answer. It never ended.
Yeah. But really, the trip is, you know, it was 4 months long. I intended to stay the winter in the North Shore. And,
wow.
You know, being 18, I was pretty naive and probably had watched, you know, Jeremiah Johnson, the movie, and wanted to have that kind of experience. And basically found myself up there and looking into oblivion, which, you know, was heavy snowfall in September, and realized that I
was
scared, and so I decided to make my way back.
Wow! So you did this with snowfall too, huh?
Yeah. Well, it was an early snowfall. Like I said, 4 months, and you know, I had gotten up into the North Shore and made my way a little bit into the interior, where I had set up some camps and basically lived on fish and some, you know, Solomon seal, which is kind of a root, and you know, other provisions that I had. And what I wanted to do was stock up enough. Like I said, it was pretty naive at the time, but you know, I wanted to try. And so I didn't get enough food. I didn't have enough provisions. And I remember standing on a hillside looking into the north and seeing, you know, these dark, dark trees with white snowflakes falling, and I realized that this was much bigger than anything I had prepared for.
How did you deal? You came up right near the lakes. Were you close to the lakes? Because if you're in a canoe and those waves are kicking up, did you have to deal with that at all, Nico?
Yeah. And I was 18 at the time, and you know, most people when they're in their teens, you know, they have a certain outlook on life that you know, maybe some people call stupid, but I think that, you know, I think that's generally true, but at the same time, I think you know, we need to push things to our limits. And I was very aware that I was on some sort of vision quest and that I may not return. I used to read the stories about the Hawaiian navigators when I was a kid. And so I was looking to immerse myself in you know, that world. So when I was in the canoe, definitely during portions, I stepped close to shore, but there were times when I, on purpose, went way offshore, very far offshore. And, you know, I knew I wanted to end up living in the Lake Superior region, and I felt I needed to earn that.
Wow.
Wow. Now, when you said that you knew you reached a point where it was much bigger than what you thought, so you actually were humbled by the experience. The first one, right? Which brought you to a point of balance, actually, just by doing this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, wow. There were plenty of times when I was scared, sure.
Mm-hmm. And in this experience, I keep wanting to say, when you were doing this, because I know you said you listened to the stories of things that happened in Hawaii, while you were doing this, did you sometimes have the feeling that you were remembering something as you were doing it?
Hmm. That's a good question. I think, yeah, it hadn't occurred to me in that way of remembering something, but definitely very aware. It felt very much like I'm going home, you know, and I had to find my way home.
Yeah. That's amazing. And you were 18 when you did the first trip, right?
Yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
then how long did it take in between when you did the first trip to do the second one, and at what point did you really feel like you started to incorporate this as a part of your life?
Yeah, that was a long, frustrating process, and basically what that involved was settling in the region. You know, I tried to settle into
mm-hmm.
Canada. Of course, they weren't going to take a 18-year-old high school dropout who didn't have a driver's license, you know. And so tried to find work on the U.S. side, doing anything and everything, working, you know, not just in the UP, but in other parts of the country. Finally, by the time I was 20, I started to pick up some jobs, Mackinac Island and around the Marquette area, and I bought some land in the Marquette area. And then a wonderful thing happened. I met some people, and I got a job at a place called Huron Mountain Club. And it's really a beautiful place. It's like a microcosm of the North Shore. It's about 30,000 acres of old-growth forest, and they have several lakes in there, and lots of old wooden boats. And they have a program where they have a children's program where you can take camping and fishing and canoeing, and I found work up there, and that really saved me because, you know, I didn't know what my role would be, you know,
mm-hmm.
in the world. You know, I knew where I fit in nature, but I didn't know where I fit in with people, and that was perfect. It was wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah, so you did that, and
that
process.
Several years.
I'm sorry, what did you say? It took a few years, was that?
Oh, yeah, it took a few years to get there, to work my way into that position.
Okay, and about that point, did you feel that you really started to get more and more involved in working in the water then, I think, at that point? Is that about the time you did?
Leading into, you know, your experience with me on Coaster 2, Schooner, that's a little different. You know, working with the kids, it was very water-based, but we were in canoes and we were on mostly inland lakes, occasionally out on the big lake. There's some islands, islands, and I would take the kids out to Huron Islands. I taught them sailing, you know, typical camp kind of setting.
Sure.
And really, my experiences were, the building of my experiences were building up kind of the experience of taking people out into the woods, taking people in a very slow, gentle, comfortable, methods and traditional methods of getting out into the woods.
Mm-hmm.
And again, following the path of water, you know,
sure.
Canoeing along lakes and portaging the canoe into different lakes and then following paths and going up and down the little mountains, and, you know. And so learning basically that sort of independence, and being responsible for a group of people, it wasn't too big of a step, quite honestly, plus all the experience I've had on boats and sailing, it wasn't too big of a step to turn that into, you know, getting my captain's license and
sure.
Getting a larger vessel and, you know, the kinds of awareness that I needed in the woods, keeping people safe, you know, are very,
yeah,
a lot of overlap of the kind of awareness you need to keep people safe out in you know, the big body of water.
Sure. Now, when I went sailing with you, you were telling me stories. And one of the stories that you told me, and I can attest to the safety of your traveling, you know, as a captain, I felt very safe, and there were people on board that had issues with sailing, and they were wonderful, too, by the way. We were all happy, so I want you to know that. And I keep being drawn to this one story that we were talking about mermaids. Do you remember?
Yeah.
And you told me, would you be willing to share that and what the name that you guys call the mermaids? There's a term. I never heard it.
Yeah. There is a traditional being in the lake here that you know, it's a mermaid. And the native people here, the Anishinaabe name for the mermaid is Nabina Bay. And there's
would you say that again? Nabina Bay?
Nabina Bay.
Is that right?
And don't ask me to spell it. I have
Bay.
No idea.
Me either. We're all in the same boat. Okay. So Nabina Bay.
I'll sing it a little off. Yeah, Nabina Bay. And
okay.
These people are you know, there's tribes of people, and they live under the waters, and especially Lake Superior. I've heard them also termed as the halfway people. You know, that live there. And
yeah.
These are beings of mythology, you know, and beings of the imagination. But that doesn't diminish anything for me. You know, I think that it is possible, you know, to see them. You know, especially, and this is what we were talking about, especially during times of stress, you know, you tend to hallucinate and maybe have lucid dreams. And the deal with the Nabina Bay is really don't want to look at them. You don't want to see them because you'll be drawn in.
If you're a good-looking guy, right? Isn't
well,
that right?
I have, every once in a while, we'll get some crew members who tend to be, you know, very good-looking guys, and
uh-huh.
So I was never a good-looking guy, so I was never, you know, I'm and there's something about good-looking guys that maybe sometimes, not always, they tend to think they can get by on their good looks. And rather than, you know, be real focused and do a good job and have, you know, a high level of skill, you know, if they do something wrong, they just kind of smile and look at you and shrug. And those are the guys that gets devoured by the mermaids.
Isn't that something?
That's
now, you said that...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
Now, you said that you had something that happened during a storm, that there was a storm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
I've been aware of the presence of this type of being, and
wow.
Yeah. Again, you know, when you're in a level of high stress, and you know, maybe some of the subconscious starts to, you know, come through, and definitely I've you know, that North Shore still draws me. And especially years ago, when I had a little more time before kids, I used to go camping up there in the canoe. You know, they wouldn't let me settle there, but they're certainly happy to have me come up to camp, you know, up in Canada. So I'd spend weeks sometimes just paddling around in the canoe along the islands and rocks. And at a certain point, things got a little out of hand, which can happen. You know, paddling along. You're in protected waters, and things slowly build, and you know, you come out to a point, and the wind and the waves build to a degree that you know, you're in trouble, and you just have to focus and start paddling and deal with each wave at a time. You know, you can't look at all the waves. When you reach the crest of the wave, you can't look at the whole sea because you may give up. So you have to deal with each one at a time. Brace yourself, paddle, brace yourself, paddle. Same thing in any difficult situation, even on the larger boat, you know. That's your home now, and this is what I try and teach the kids. It's not about running to safety as fast as you can. This is your home. So make yourself at home, because you're going to be here a while, and deal with it little by little. So I'm in that mindset, but I'm also, there's a part of me that's aware that it is getting out of hand, and these waves are getting big, and I am getting very tired. And you know, the sky is gray, and there's a spray that's coming over, and the timing has to be just right to bail out the canoe while I'm bracing for the wave, deal with the next wave, slowly inching my way around to where there's a quiet, you know, around behind a headland where I can get into quieter water. And you start to question, will I make it? You know, the water's cold. Will I make it? And that's when you start kind of seeing things out of the corner of your eye. And on this situation where you asked if I had ever seen one, that's the time that I was very aware that out of the corner of my eye, there was definitely a long-haired being swimming along next to me, watching. And
I believe you. I believe you. Totally.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, that's wild. Now, I want you to know, you must be better looking than you think you are, because she did come for you. So be aware of that, okay? Now, Rosalind had a good question. She said, are they like that with women, too? Remember?
I wouldn't know.
No, I guess you wouldn't. But didn't you say that they don't go after mermen because they think the mermen are really ugly?
Well, this is the greater mermaid mythology. You know, this is kind of the world
interesting
over where, the mermen are pretty ugly. So the mermaids are more towards
how
humans.
Sad.
So sorry,
oh, gosh.
But
you can't be dating them now, right?
No. Now, here's something that addresses, you know, a different, maybe a little different level of the dangers of the mermaid. You know, they're because when you're talking about the beauty of a mermaid, and this is something that I think maybe both of you will probably understand this, and this is where I think a woman, you know, it would have. It doesn't matter what sex you are, but when you look out into Lake Superior, especially on a day like today, you know, the water is gorgeous today. It's blue sky, and there's a breeze, and you see that water, and the rocks are amazing. You know, the grays and gray granites and the quartzes and the pinks, it's all swirling and mixing. and just reflecting and the sparkles of the water. And I don't know if you've ever done this, but you look at those sparkles in the sun and fall in love with them and see what happens to those sparkles. They change. They actually seem to go into
the water.
And then all of a sudden, you've lost. You are. You're just so mesmerized by the beauty. You'll never be the same. And that's dangerous to somebody who has to go to work the next morning.
Mm-hmm.
You're gone.
Mm-hmm.
You're gone. That lake, you know, may have fallen in love with you, and you would gladly give up everything. You forgot. You forgot your loved ones. You forgot your job. You forgot all your responsibilities. You're gone. And
mm-hmm.
That's kind of maybe a level that pretty much everybody can understand when pretty much talking about any body of water. And that's where the mermaid
sure.
And you know, even a little pond.
So, TJ, did you have a question? I can hear you. You're going there.
Well, you know, you met Roslyn Miko. And Nico, and we actually channeled mermaids. Do you believe that that's possible?
Wow. Well, you know, I've known Rosalind for years. She's a friend of mine, and she's been a friend for years. And yeah, I just love her to death. She's great.
Yeah.
We channeled mermaids.
Yeah.
We channeled mermaids, and what they told me and Rosalind, speaking through Roslyn, they don't really like people too much, at least the ones in the ocean. I don't know about the ones in the Great Lakes. I wasn't aware that there were mermaids, but I guess if they're in the ocean, I can see that they could be anywhere. And they kind of avoided us. What is your take on, you remember that documentary that came out about mermaids? Did you ever see that, Nico?
I saw one where they were, and my wife and I were watching this, and they were focusing in on material and physical evidence of mermaids.
Right.
And is that the one?
That is the one. Yes, that was these scientists recovered some bones, and they believe it. It's nothing like we've seen before, any kind of fish, and then you know, there seems to be something that might have washed up on different shores, things like that. So, I mean, is that something that you felt was real? Or, I mean,
here's my thought process on that. I'm not that concerned of whether, you know, when you talk about real, it's like when my kids asked if Santa Claus was real, you know. And I always told them, of course Santa Claus is real. Of course Santa Claus is real.
Mm-hmm.
And as they got older, you know, they kept questioning me, and finally, they know who their father is, and they said, "Well, you mean in the imagination, right?" And I said, "Well, yeah, but that doesn't make Santa Claus any less powerful. In fact, probably more so.
Mm-hmm.
You know, look at what Santa Claus does through the imagination, you know." And
mm-hmm.
I definitely feel that things can manifest themselves into material reality. Can a mermaid manifest itself into material reality? Probably. You know, am I that interested in it? I'm not that interested in it. I think I'm more interested in, basically, I'm very interested in what you and Rosalind found. I'm very interested in the mermaids not liking us very much.
mm-hmm.
Well, you know what's funny about...
No, I can't...
I was going to say...
Go ahead.
I was going to say, we did that show of 2-3 years ago, and I had never, to be honest with you, Nico, I really wasn't sure if I really believed in mermaids. I was always open to the possibility of all things, but we talked to them, and they were talking about how they stayed out of sight, they stayed away, they were in the deep, and they avoided humans because of what we've done to the sea and the things that we're doing right now. And then I saw that documentary which came out, and it said that, you know, the government, some of the military was testing these new waves of sonar to attack with, to use it for as an attack weapon. And by doing that, it was causing whales to beach themselves, and that's where they believe they found a mermaid or something that they couldn't explain. And that is why I think they're pissed off at us, to be honest with you, Nico, because we haven't taken care of the ocean.
Yeah, and, you know, this is the time, you know, we're entering in the precession of the equinoxes. We're entering into the time of the Aquarius. Mm-hmm. And this is the water people, you know, the mer people. And certainly I think that sort of energy is going to be on our minds and entering in our minds. And maybe there's a wisdom that they can bring us, you know, knowledge and a knowing. And certainly, if any time is a time for them to start manifesting them into physical reality, it's probably, you know, most likely to happen now. There are a lot of old stories of actual fishermen, you know, catching mermaids and sharing it with townsfolk, you know. Who knows? Who knows? I had a little bit of the problem with the documentary because some of the images, my blink reaction was, well, that looks staged.
Yeah, I thought that too. I thought that the same thing. Like the kid with the camera that happens to be up on the beach and the thing starts moving. Okay, that part I found hard to believe. But when the scientists were talking and what they found, I felt that there could be something there. And then, of course, you know, it kind of tied in with what Rosalind was telling me about, you know, makes sense why they're pissed off at us. Now I know why.
Yeah.
You know, sure. You know, I had this experience. I work with kids, and there's a couple things that I started to notice, that a lot of the children being born actually carry the attributes of the nature spirits and the mermaids. And I keep thinking of this one little girl that came to see me. She was abused, and it was very interesting. When she came in, her light was brilliant, but she couldn't walk on her feet. And I watched her, she was maybe three, go and lay on my couch and move her legs like a fin. And I'm talking, this couldn't be staged. I was like blown away by what I saw. And her parents told me that when she's at home, she lives in a mermaid outfit, that's all she talks about. And I've had this realization that, like you said, that there's a way that these mermaids can bring these wisdoms through. And I feel one of the ways is through our children, that some of them are coming in with that spirit and they're imprinting it here, which is, you know, really congruent with everything you're talking about, you know? And this is something, I mean, I wish I had photos. It just blew me away. And I've seen stuff, so, you know, that says something, you know? But, so anyway, I do feel they're coming through. And I think documentaries, I didn't see the documentary, but, you know, from what you're saying, it does sound a little, excuse the expression, fishy. So,
and you know, I wonder what their agenda is, but again, I'm less interested in that because that almost diminishes the other experiences. You know, all of us have had experiences with mermaids,
sure,
whether or not we actually, you know, scientifically had them in a material form doesn't mean that you have experience, and that could be written.
Absolutely. Yeah, so I think, too, that with everything you're describing, Nico, you know, with your experiences in the water, along with the mermaids, is there anything else that's happened in the water specifically that's got the otherworldly feel to it to you?
Well, the main being, you know, we're talking about stories, and we're, you know, the name, the Nabina Bay is from the Anishinaabe people who the primal people of this area. And spirit of the lake, and that spirit of the lake is Mishipishu. And Mishipishu is a very powerful being. And Mishipishu is kind of there's some cliff paintings, you know, around Lake Superior that depict Mishipishu, and they all depict Mishipishu with basically the face of a panther and horned, and the body of a dragon, and with
with
copper scales.
Holy cow! I've never heard of this dude.
And Mishipishu is one of these beings. You know, it's really, like I said, the spirit of the lake. You know, today is beautiful, calm, and it's just gorgeous today. But boy, that Mishipishu, that spirit, can just turn this lake up into a very dark and foreboding place.
Wow.
So I think Mishipishu is kind of a good representative of, you know, something to think about when we mess with the purity of this water. You know, it can turn awfully fast. And
with
that, you know, what's happening now all over the Great Lakes, and there's a lot of questions we need to ask ourselves, you know. You know, what is it about that we need to protect?
So what do you feel is happening in the lakes now that may create something?
Well, that's happening? You know, close to home, there's a new mine that's being built, and there's a lot of concerns. It's a sulfide mining project. There's a lot of concerns about the water quality here, somehow the water, you know, the chemicals that are used in the process leaking into the lakes. And there's a species of lake trout called a coaster brook trout that's threatened, you know, by this mining action. And it's a unique species of trout. So that's close to home. Also, there's the, you know, the oil right now in Duluth, they're amping up with a pipeline to start shipping oil through Lake Superior. And you know, that's a concern. It better be done very carefully, you know. You know, what are the sacrifices we're willing to make for progress? And whose progress is it? Is this the way, you know, I would choose to progress, or somebody else would choose to progress, you know? And boy, you know, the water in this lake, and you know, you just feel the tail of Mishipishu twitching at all these actions.
Yeah. Well, what you're talking about, I know this is a real concern, and it's really important to get the message before things get crazy, you know, and before you have a visitor from this being. But I also, have you ever heard of Dr. Emoto?
You know, I have heard that name, but explain to me. I'm not familiar.
Okay. He's the guy who discovered that if you speak into water, like if you say glass of water, right, I hate you, the cells will crystallize with hate. But if you speak into the water and send peace or health vibration, it'll actually change the molecular structure of the cells of the water. You've heard
now
of him?
I know who.
Yeah.
Yes, I have his book, so I should have recognized the name.
Yes.
A little bit.
Yes, you know, I'm getting this hit that this is like, this message you're putting out there is really important, and that this might be a good time for people to hear about Dr. Emoto and blessing the water, and maybe each time you take a trip, blessing the water so that the cells of Lake Superior and all the lakes can stay pristine, so that their cells remember who they are.
Yeah,
because this is just, I mean, I was just there, and it's just, it's beautiful. I mean, it's heaven on earth there. It really is. It's like this little spot in the USA, that, you know, in the summer, no way am I going there in the winter, though. I think you guys are some of the most bravest people I have ever met. But I won't go in the winter, but in the summer, I mean, it's like heaven. And the idea of anything happening to those lakes is just, you know, awful, awful. TJ, were you going to say something?
Well, you know, Lake Superior is the most pristine, but, you know, I live on Lake Michigan. And it's good in this area, but we have a lot of issues as well. And then as you go further south towards major cities, there's a lot of pollution. And the lake color is not as pure. And, you know, we have the zebra mussels, and we have the carp, Asian carp, possibly getting in, and all these other things that are brought in by these boats that come in, you know, or come up through different channels. So there's a lot. There's a lot of issues. I talked to some guys that believe the lakes are being drained because they dredged the St. Mary's River. Have you ever heard of that at all, Nico?
Yeah, they're making the film to bring awareness. And the name of the film is Drain.
Right.
Drain, and something to look up, yeah.
So that's another thing that's going on. These two fellows, they came into the radio station. One of the guys actually was a drummer for the Gin Blossoms, I think. And the other fellow was making the film. And they believed that back in the 60s is when they dredged the St. Mary's, which has caused the lakes, the lake water, because all the lake water has gone down, hasn't it? Superior as well, right?
Yeah. It's back up a little this year. You know, because the combination of the snow and the ice cover keeping it from evaporating. But generally, it does seem to be going down, the lake levels. Yeah.
Wow. Well, you know, yeah, I'm kind of hoping with all that rain you guys have been getting is really going to help. Really, you know, I'm really hoping, yeah, seriously, it'll help. But,
yeah.
So at this point, right, is there, I'm wondering if there's anything else concerning that, Nico, that you wanted to add with that?
I think that, you know, the level of consciousness is important. And we, you know,
yeah,
just bringing it back to understanding that things we do have an effect.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
and,
we're all interconnected. Yes,
mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it's the love now, that allows you to make those sacrifices. You know, to be in love with your environment. You know.
Yeah.
Don't want,
yeah,
to be destroyed. You know.
No.
The soils and the waters and the stones. They, you know, they do have a consciousness. And we can key into that consciousness. And until we do that, we're probably not going to take care of things. You know?
Yeah. Well, hopefully people hear this message and start to consider more so what we're doing to the planet and the earth and the waters, and, you know, that there is consciousness in everything. I think what you said is really important. And I think sometimes, too, it's the mythology and these myths and the mystical that makes us consider these things. Because, it, you know, don't you think that maybe it helps us to view our Earth and our planet in a new dimension, a new light, you know?
Yeah, new and old.
Yeah.
These are... Yeah. Stories that have been dragged through the mud. They survived somehow. You know, they must be important.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you said, too, living where you live, right, that you've had some experiences on land, too, didn't you?
Yeah.
Did I hear that right? Yeah. Is there anything you want to share? I haven't heard any of these, so I'm, like, sitting on the edge of my chair.
Oh, boy, it's hard for me to break into one. The forests around the Lake Superior region, you know, they're incredible, and TJ will agree with me, I'm sure. Just you know, we live I believe in one of the most amazing places.
Right.
Boy, you know, you have a mixture of the hardwoods and the pines, and again, you know, it's another place to lose yourself, and it's another place mm-hmm. where you know, maybe some of those subconscious thoughts, some of those mythological beings, some of those, you know, the imagination can come through. And you know, I just went for a walk today, and certainly there are some big boulders and stones that boy have faces in them, you know, and you know, and trees and just, you know, you're in not only a three-dimensional landscape, but a multi-dimensional landscape, you know, and
sure.
And and when you get into the older forests, you know, the old growth, and there are even still some virgin forests there, you know, in the area, and you when you start getting into those areas, there's less veils, and that's where you can have experiences with, you know, you kind of have to do a little double take. You know, did I just see what I thought I saw? You know, and
mm-hmm.
I like that. I like it when I'm in that kind of situation and I question, you know, what did I just see? You know?
Yeah. So have you ever talked to the stone or tree people? I truly believe in them. I do. I've had things, but
yeah.
I'm curious. Have you talked to them and spoken to them?
I actually think most people do. I think we just don't realize it.
Mm-hmm.
I think on an emotional level, we're speaking. And when you know, somebody, you could have even the most hardened, you know, grumpy, you know, guy. I'm thinking of my uncle,
mm-hmm.
you know, and sit him down. I remember him sitting down on the shore of a lake and just being mm-hmm. totally at peace. And there's some sort of going on there, and you know, it can be as simple as that, but I think that complex messages can come through too.
Sure Yeah. Now, since after spending all this time there, do you feel like any of the messages they gave you, have you brought any of that back? Have you looked at that and used it in your everyday life?
Well, yeah. And you know, this is, I kind of mentioned this to you earlier, we're kind of trained not to talk about these things, you know.
But here's the good news. Here you can talk about all of it.
Okay. Well, and I think what I've managed to do is, I think I've gotten pretty good at compartmentalizing it, you know.
Okay.
So I have multiple experiences. I kind of like have a little cabinet somewhere, you know, in the chambers of my heart that I just kind of store it in. And if I'm in town, let's say I'm doing my licensed captain kind of stuff, you know, people want to be assured that the captain of the ship they're on is, you know, pretty aware of the here and now facts, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want somebody off seeing mermaids while they're out there dealing, you know. But can I access that part of myself if I need to or if I want to?
Yeah.
And I think over time, over the past 30 years of living out here, I've been able to understand, well, now the time is appropriate, you know, and now I can access that. Now I need that. Now I need the lessons that are contained in that experience. And so I can go to that cabinet, open it up. And yeah, certainly I also do during the winter months, I have a wood shop, and I do carvings and sculpture. And you know, I go and you know, we've got some land, and a lot of the trees I'm taking from the land, and I'm very aware of nature spirits around me and,
mm-hmm.
and helping choose which trees I should take. You know, worked as a logger. You know, I've worked as a logger. I'm not opposed to cutting down trees. I, you know, I do have friends, what I consider friends that are trees. You know,
mm-hmm.
there's time for them to die. And
yes.
I'm sometimes part of that, trying to be mm-hmm. conscious about that, you know. And I have experienced seeing these beings, you know, in maybe lucid kind of dreams. I've also experienced hearing them, you know, with a voice, and I've experienced having, you know, feeling them, having them touch me. Never all three at the same time. That would be interesting, but I've never.
Oh, it's coming. It's coming. Yep. It's really cool, you know, but what you're describing, I think, you know, is part, I mean, you can't separate the essence of life in creation from living your life because we're all connected and, you know, everything you're describing is already present with what you're doing. So it just makes sense that you'd be having all these experiences. So have you ever read a book called The Garden at Findhorn?
Oh, Findhorn, yeah.
Yeah.
A friend of mine.
Yes. That one, and then there's one, there's three books. A Summer with the Leprechaun. Have you read that one?
No, never heard of that one.
No,
I'm writing it
I think
down
you'd
right
enjoy
now.
That one. Okay, and the other is Behaving as If the God in All Things Mattered.
Ooh, say that one again.
Behaving as If the God in All Things Mattered.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I know, I got you writing down now. See, I get
I'm writing down. I just got it.
Yeah, you know, that's me. Okay, that's good. Have you had a particular experience that you'd like to share? You know, we're all yours here.
Well, oh boy, I'm trying to imagine. Maybe if you tell me some of your experiences, it'll kind of fit in, and we'll have a conversation.
Okay. All right. I'll go first. Okay. Are you there, TJ?
Still here. Yep.
There? All right, I'm going to go first, okay? I watered a garden, and I was very involved in World Peace Gardens for a long time. And just one time, I just got done watering all these plants, and I was sitting in the sun, and I was relaxing on a chaise lounge. And all of a sudden, the spark of light appeared in front of me, and out of the light came this fairy giggling and laughing and flying and spinning. And she told me her name and gave me a job and then disappeared. And it's one of many I've had. And from that, I learned two really important, well, three. I learned that, yeah, fairies are real. The other things I learned that they will come to you when you're working on something that they're really drawn to. They are receptive to that. They don't just come as parlor tricks. And the other thing is they don't like to have their name spoken because they, once you know their name, they like to keep it a secret because they believe they lose power if their name is spoken, like, indignantly in some way. So it's a good idea to keep their name secret. And that's three things I learned from them, and I love them. And that was one of mine.
I like that. I like that they're drawn to maybe something you're working on that they like. I like that a lot. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And it sounds like that's why they like hanging out with you.
Yeah, there's a fellow that I'm very aware of most of the time when I'm back, you know, working on a wood carving, and he's kind of an older guy with a gray beard, kind of a gnomish looking guy.
Oh,
and
cool.
Again, I choose not to look at him directly because I don't want to question it. I don't want to force the issue, but I like the company, you know. I like his company.
Yeah.
And every once in a while, he'll remind me to do a good job. And that's the voice I can hear. You know, he's definitely my standard of, you know, do a good job. Even more so than my brother. My brother's hard on me, but this guy, I want to do a good job for him. You know.
Well, I have to laugh because, you know, they're like that. They are. They're like, they want you to, you know, do a good job. And it sounds like what you have is a very deep connection with them, and they open you to your clairaudio and clairsentient experiences.
I've never heard
clairaudio.
Of that.
Well, you know how you've heard of clairvoyance, how people see visions and that kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
You've heard of that? People who do readings are called sometimes
clairvoyant.
Yeah. Well, you have all those going for you. It's not, you know, I mean, I'm hearing that you're a clairaudio, so you hear them, and it's very real and very true and not crazy, very real, very true, and you feel them. And that's clairsentient. And the only reason you don't see them is because you don't look at them, but I have a feeling you're clairvoyant, too. So
I have the whole package
there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I have seen them. I have seen them. I don't look directly at them often because I know what happens when I do. You know, it doesn't last.
Okay.
And like
so
I said,
I like
So you
think they disappear?
It forces maybe another part of my brain to click in,
mm-hmm.
and that questioning
mm-hmm.
part that you know, maybe a little bit more of the left brain, or maybe I'm testing something. So it's like I'll see them out of the corner of my eye, and rather than look
mm-hmm.
directly at it, I'll just kind of leave it there off the corner. Although I have had situations where I've been able to directly stare and actually even walk around a presence
mm.
and it didn't disappear. But again, that was under a time of high stress and I probably was you know, in and out of some lucid dreaming.
Well, you know, it's interesting because in times of high stress, I think that people draw aspects of spirit to them that brings comfort and connection. So what you call lucid dreaming, I truly feel like it's probably different words, but I just hear that your soul vibrates the connections to you that brings you comfort and helps you feel that sense of, oh, my soul can have home here on earth. And I think that it's that link. That's when they come. They're like, oh, he needs company. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. That sounds really good, Joy. Because it is comforting. You know, it is comforting. It's you know, you can feel pretty alone sometimes.
Yeah.
And you know, it's nice to if something else shows up.
Sure. And I think that you're, like, one of the things that's obvious is you're bringing a perception to the world that you're experiencing these different things, that not everybody has those experiences. So I think it's good that you have company on the way while you're doing it, you know. But you're also a messenger, too, and usually messengers speak up first and then everybody else gets on board. So, you know, it'll be neat. I hope at some point that you write a book on your adventures.
Yeah, I like what Garrison Keillor said. You know, he said the only one who has the right to write a book about him was his children, because they'll tell the truth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and probably
that's great.
A harder truth than anyone else would tell. So, I'm hoping.
So you're going to leave it up to your kids?
Yeah, they'll be hard on me, but that's all right. That's good. It'll be more accurate.
Well, I met your one son, and he's a wonderful guy. And I saw he's a sea captain too, right?
I'm sorry, I missed that. Yeah.
I said I heard your son. Yes. He is too?
Thanos is also a Thanos, my oldest son, he's a captain also, and he's very deep. He sees things with clarity that other people don't seem to. And he doesn't quite understand that at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he understands, you know, that he actually can see around corners that other people can't see. And it makes him feel like maybe he's not quite caught up to speed with them. I think he's just kind of, he's busy looking into those corners, those dark places, and understanding things. And it actually makes him a very good captain. He's very safe.
I believe it.
Yeah. He's very aware of everything that's going on the vessel, things that other people aren't aware of. He knows.
Well, I definitely, after meeting him, could see he's an indigo child. Not a child, but he's from the indigo ray, so... When you describe him, that is such indigo trait. So I hope he reads that book someday, too. PJ, do you have a question there?
No, not really. No, we're kind of at our limit right about now.
Yeah, I was thinking so. But I just wanted to ask, Nico, before we tie it up here, if you have anything you wanted to add or... you want to tell people where they can find you if they want to go for a sale? Would you like to share that?
Yeah. The vessel is Coaster 2, and it's a schooner. It's an old wooden schooner. It really is from a different time. And they can check out on the website Superior Odyssey. There's a little film that's kind of fun to watch. You can see the boat on it. It's called Sailing Lake Superior, and it was made by Aaron Peterson. They can check that out on YouTube, and that'll give them a chance to kind of see some of the boat and the lake.
Wonderful.
It was a lot of fun, and I was nervous, but you're right, it's just a conversation. And I had a lot of fun with you and your group on the boat. It was a very gentle day out on the lake.
Yeah, it was lovely. It really was. And I want to thank you for coming on the show and sharing yourself. And I hope you'll come on again.
Sure. I would come on again.
Okay. All right. And TJ? I want to thank you again,
sidekick. You're welcome. And it's nice to meet you, Nico.
Yes.
Yeah, nice to hear from you. Hopefully we'll get to meet when you come up to Marquette, TJ.
Great. We'll go across the lake in canoes. How's that?
Oh, boy. we'd have some stories then.
We'll just go to Isle Royale. We'll just go to Isle Royale.
even that.
Piece of cake. We could do it in a day. Be done in a day. Boom.
you
guys go ahead and do that, and then you can come on the show again, both of you. Okay? Have adventures.
Maybe we'll just go to Partridge Island.
Yeah, there's an idea.
Okay.
Well, I want to thank everybody for listening, and we'll be in touch again. We'll have another show in a couple of weeks. Okay? Take care, everyone.